Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. On today's show, we are talking about AI with the Mythbusters, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz. So AI doesn't need much of an introduction. It is a hot topic everywhere, from conferences and boardrooms to the media, and then, of course, in the power generation industry. But what does need, however, is clarification. So can you guys kick us off by giving your perspective on what AI is and isn't, and some examples of applications in the turbo machinery industry?
I can start this, and thanks for having us again. This is a very relevant topic, as you mentioned, because everybody's talking about it, but it's not just talking about it. There's actual implementation in our industry. We're the old guys, and so we should probably know the least about it, but we're also very much involved still in the field, and so we see AI. To your question, there's a very wide range of answers to what AI is, and for the sake of the discussion today, I'd really like to narrow it, because, I mean, a lot of people call, just a computer program, they call that AI. Just because you have an if statement in a Fortran code doesn't make it AI, right? Then other people look at statistical analysis and call that AI. Any kind of logic in programming is sometimes even referred to as AI. And that's all good, and I don't want to be snobby about it. That's all fine. By that definition, we've been doing AI for the last 70 years. But I think we need to, for this discussion, be a little more narrow and really focus on machine learning. What's really been new over the last 15 years is machine learning, but where we've really seen the revolution is the last 3 or 4 years, where the machine learning has become very sophisticated, that it has become useful and has really made an impact in all fields as far as data analysis and engineering in the humanities. We're going to focus on turbo machinery, I guess. And it's starting to make an impact. We're still in the infancy of it right now, because it's really still a new technology. But the definition I'd like to look at is really machine learning, AI, and how does that impact turbo machinery design, turbo machinery business, the entire market for turbo machinery.
I mean, first of all, both of us are probably too old to be really scared about AI, but it is certainly a topic. If I were today starting as a young engineer or making decisions about where to go to college, that would have to be in my future planning without any doubt. As Klaus has said, it can be a very powerful tool for many applications, but there is probably at least as much hype around what AI today can do, that we will, and we already are getting in a phase where people are really becoming more clear-sighted on what they can do with AI. There is actually, since we're talking about future a little bit, there is actually a futurologist who's relatively well known. Name is Ray Kurzweil, who has predicted that within the next 3 or 4 years, we will get to the point where artificial intelligence is really going to become intelligence and not just the large artificial tool. Again, that may well be one of the forecasts that does not hold true. But I think what we want to talk about today mostly is really, okay, AI as it is today, what can we use it for and what does it mean?
Yeah. And before we jump into the first question, I guess, Rainer is right. There's a lot of young engineers that are very concerned about, am I going to be replaced with AI? There are students that worry about their future of AI. I think there's a lot of hype and a lot of panic about things that we really are exaggerating on some of these statements, where people are saying all jobs will be replaced with AI. We're far away from that. But without getting too deep into that, the human aspect of it, I think we should focus on the turbo machinery and the design aspect of it. So,
okay. So what are some examples of applications in turbo machinery, and how are they being used in these applications?
So, I mean, the areas where we're seeing AI come in right now is, for example, in condition-based monitoring and maintenance, fleet monitoring, which is kind of sort of similar, digital twins, data analysis, especially using this AI for data analysis from very large CFD or FEA models. It really does a good job at telling you what does it really mean, without really telling us how it tell why it figured it out what it means. But search of documentation, search of literature, it's very good because it does a really good job of summarizing past work in a field. Design tools such as drafting. There's many manual functions in drafting that are very labor intensive that can be taken over by AI. And so we're seeing it as another tool that is very, very useful. And if you look at it as a tool, it can be very practical. If you look at it as an answer to everything, you can easily make mistakes. And I think we'll talk about this some more later, but it can easily be overused. It's similar in the sense to a human being, right? You don't really know what it does. I mean, AI has unfortunately got to the point where you ask it a question, it gives you an answer, but it really doesn't tell you how it got to that answer.
Yeah, and I think we really have to distinguish between the, let's say, the mechanics of the AI tool and the data where it draws its intelligence from. So a lot of it is really what data do I feed the model for training purposes to set it up. And herein, by the way, lies one of the problems that for many applications, we have that data and we can use standardized models. But for other applications, especially in the engineering field, that doesn't exist. And the third thing is, and AI is by now pretty famous for that it sometimes creates answers that are completely wrong. So we have to really very consciously decide where we want to use AI. And Klaus said that exactly. It's perfect for finding documents, for finding for analyzing documents. And it's actually, if you today open your Google search engine, you will see that the first answer is AI generated. And sometimes it's pretty good. On the more technical things, it's quite frankly not.
I mean, it replaces physical models, which can be good and sometimes cannot be good, right? I mean, for example, if you look at the compressor, we have very good physical models of how a compressor works. And these physical models allow us to predict, you know, the performance of that compressor. You can replace that with an AI tool that analyzes a lot of data, and it will most likely give you the same output. What it will not give you is any physical understanding of how that compressor works and if something goes wrong, how you can fix it. It will just basically duplicate the output through a lot of learning, but it really doesn't have any physics inside of it. So it is wonderful for data sets that are huge, where you really would have a hard time with the physical model anyway. But anywhere where you can apply a physical model that provides you with some understanding is useful. As an example where it is useful, where we're starting to see it being useful, is fleet monitoring. Fleet monitoring is basically the monitoring of equipment at a centralized location of similar equipment or related equipment. And you get a lot of data from a compressor, from a gas turbine, from a steam turbine in the field, and you collect that data. It's massive amounts of data, vibration, temperatures, pressures, whatever you want, and you collect that data. And fleet monitoring has been done for 30, 40 years now. We've had these systems in place, and then we trended data, and we looked at it. And sometimes you got useful answers, and sometimes you didn't. Fleet monitoring in combination with AI, where you can feed all this data into a gigantic black box, basically, and say, hey, you know, what's going on here? Do you see any patterns of failure? Do you see any patterns of repair opportunity? Do you see any patterns of maintenance requirements where, you know, similar things are happening? Data that would be far too complex for a human to kind of analyze. That's where AI comes in very, very nicely. You can look at this massive amount of data and you can find patterns. You can look at relationships. And we're seeing the first attempts here where it has been used for fleet monitoring, for example, and it has accurately predicted that machines will have trouble. It can't really tell you why. It's just going to tell you, yeah, because we have seen similar situations and similar machines under similar circumstances before, and therefore you may be in trouble here. But that's still very, very useful information and a valuable tool.
Yeah, one of the things you have to be careful, though, is that AI usually has learning modules. In other words, it may well be that a certain input gives you a certain answer in January, but will give you a different answer in July, and you will not be able to reconstruct what actually generated these difficult answers. The other thing that Klaus said is very important, that essentially the way AI can be used successfully is a support function to where at the end of the day, a human mind will make decisions based on that information. So I don't think the world is prepared that we would run, let's say, a large pipeline or large chemical plant simply automatically under the control of an AI module.
Okay, so you mentioned that AI can kind of act like a black box, and so does that mean it necessarily doesn't provide more physical insight? What are the risks involved in that?
Yeah, I mean, it does act like a black box, and the problem there is we don't really know what it does inside. So, I mean, for example, an example that we see the usage of AI right now is in the prediction of weather patterns, right? And how does that impact us in the energy industry? For example, we now have distributed electric systems where we have wind farms and solar PV installations, and AI is being used to predict, when you're going to have wind and when you're going to have solar, and then it uses that information to properly store energy in batteries and in other devices, and that's very, very good, right? Because we talk a massive amount of data. Nobody on a human scale would be able to analyze this data. But if you then look at that and say, why? Why are you predicting that we need more storage capacity now in the Southeast for the next 2 or 3 days? You don't have any knowledge as what happens inside, right? It's just a lot of data that's being analyzed that is correlated, but there's no real physical relationship between input and output there. So that's the same with turbo machinery and fleet monitoring, for example. When you use AI for fleet monitoring, you really don't know why it's saying what's happening, but you get a good answer most of the time. And that's still valuable. And that's why it's a tool, but it's not 100% reliable tool because, as Rainer said, there is a lack of consistency. It may give you two different AI models, may give you different answers, or the same AI model on Monday may give you different answer to the same question 4 or 5 days ago. And that's, by the way, in science and engineering is fatal. If you ask the same question to a computer, you should always get the same answer, but that's currently not the case with AI. I can ask it a question one day and I'll get an answer to the same question a different day and I'll get a different answer. So that is a huge problem. So consistency is a problem. Lack of physical understanding of a problem, lack of the ability to document how it got to an answer is a huge problem. But we should not, therefore, just put it aside and say it's not good, right? It's still good. It's a useful tool for some applications.
And one of the things we have to be aware of is that humans are not particularly perfect either. We will work with people who give you a certain answer on Monday and give you a different answer on Friday, and you'll never be able to really figure out why they are doing that. So in a way, the correct way of using AI is you have to be aware of its limitations, and you set the hype aside, and then use it for applications where AI is really good, for example, dealing with huge amounts of data. There is no critical applications where there's not somewhere a human or a group of humans who basically then uses these results to make decisions that have a certain level of gravity.
Yeah. I mean, AI in that sense, and Rainer's right, is surprisingly human, right? I mean, if you talk to a young engineer and you give him an assignment, he'll come back with an answer. They can very often not tell you how they got there either, right? They followed some process and they don't really know why that the certain equation using Euler's equation or whatever gave him an answer. It gave him the answer and they'll give it to you. And that's in the sense like AI. The beauty of AI right now is that you can handle these very, very large data sets that are really outside of the bounds of what was humanly possible as far as analyzing it. And I mean, we've always had statistical tools that can take very, very, very large sums of data and look at them. But it's not just drawing straight lines or, you know, curve fits and correlations. It's really coming up with patterns, seeing patterns in very, very complex data with hundreds and hundreds of variables and gigabytes of information. So that's where it's nice. And you know, kind of go back to the applications, because we are turbo machinery engineers and we should talk about turbo machinery. Fleet monitoring is an area that's really, really relevant. The other things where we're seeing it is in CFD, computational fluid dynamic analysis, when you get output from what by itself is already a black box, right? You put information in, you get output from these software models that you don't really understand what it means anymore. And then it becomes very difficult to even analyze the data because there's a lot of velocity vectors and pressure contours and all that kind of stuff. And you get to the point you don't really know what it means anymore because these models have become so large with millions and millions of nodes, basically, that really only AI can tell you what's going on. Same with finite element analysis. So we're moving now from where AI is not just a data collection and analyzing tool, but where really can be used to make sense out of data. And that's really only been, at least in my experience, I've only seen this for the last 2 or 3 years. That's very recent. Even 6, 7 years ago, AI was not capable of doing that.
We have to also acknowledge that actually, you know, you playfully say, okay, I'm going to use AI for that. But it's actually a hugely complicated system that's fiendishly expensive to set up unless you use some standardized system that's already there. And as we will talk about later probably, is it also uses fiendish amounts of energy to function. So there are some also physical limitations on how to do these things.
Okay, so you mentioned consistency, but what about documentation? How about the ability to document how a solution is found? I know you kind of touched on that, but can you dive a bit into that?
Yeah, and that's a really, really annoying challenge. These things hang together, right? Consistency and ability to tell us why it came up with an answer is critical for most science and engineering. If I ask AI to explain to me why it predicted that a certain machine is going to fail, then I need to understand how it came up with that reasoning, because otherwise I don't trust it. And it tells me, oh, this machine over there is going to fail because I saw a pattern in the data. But if I can't then make any sense out of the pattern of the data, then it becomes somewhat useless because it could be just random. Or it could be just something very similar. And so the ability to reason is, but I, by the way, I've seen improvements in AI in that too. They've gotten better. And when you go back and ask them, you know, can you explain how you came up with this? And it actually gives you an answer that sometimes makes sense. But that's is really, really important, not just to give you an answer, but how do you came up with that answer? I mean, I don't know if you remember, Rainer, but you know, when we went to school, and you took an exam in math or in science, you always get partial credit if you showed your work, right? You know, how you came up with the answer. And even if your answer was wrong, you still get partial credit for it because it's very important to show that you know how to get there. And that's just not there with these black box models, because number one, it doesn't follow the rules of physics. It follows basically just the correlation. But it has also, even if there is some reasoning behind it, it has a very hard time explaining how it got there.
I mean, let's use one of the examples that Klaus mentioned about finding documents out of large amounts of documentation that exists in companies or in the public domain. If I formulate a certain problem that I have and just ask an AI module, find me the literature, it will do a very good job. It may not find everything that one could potentially find, but it will more likely than not do a much better job than I will do if I search it on my computer. If I, on the same topic, would ask AI to find the solution for me, it probably would give me it almost certainly will give me an answer too, but there I probably would have to be very careful on whether I believe it and whether I understand the underlying assumptions that led to that solution. And that's really one of the critical points. And I said that earlier, you have to understand what AI at various levels can do and where it basically will give you answers that may or may not make sense.
Yeah. But that's also, I mean, Rainer brings up two good points there. One of them is about the ability to provide an answer and a solution, right? But using the same example, for example, and this is where the beauty of AI is right now, I can use AI right now in our entire database of all publications that are in the gas turbine industry effectively, because they're all online, most of them at least from 1950s on. And you can tell AI, hey, you know, find all the work related to, let's say, boundary layer theory, and summarize the findings pertaining to, you know, whatever separation points or something. Or look at all the literature about axial compressor rotating stall and summarize the findings. And it will actually do a reasonably good job in summarizing the work. If I were to send off an engineer to do the same amount of work, that would take weeks and weeks of work, and I would probably get a pretty crappy answer. Whereas actually from AI, for that kind of task, within a minute, I have a reasonably good answer. It doesn't mean it finds everything. It doesn't mean it finds it correct, all the answers. There will still be mistakes in it. But by the way, you get the same thing from engineers, right? You get incorrect answers, and you'll have things that are missing. The one thing that would be nice to have an AI, and it's been suggested, but nobody really seems to want to implement it, is some kind of truthfulness score or accuracy score. Some kind of, you know, when AI gives you an answer, it gives you a number and says, you know, this is the probability that I think I'm right about my answer. Because when AI confidently tells me this is the answer, I don't know how confident it is about it. Whereas with most engineers, you know, they're kind of getting nervous and they're shaking and whatever. And you'll see, okay, they're not really that sure about the answer. AI will very confidently give you the answer. It would be nice to have some kind of score where it says, okay, I'm 40% certain about this, or I'm 80% certain about this answer. That's still very useful, right? That's still an incredibly useful tool, even if it tells me I'm only 40% certain about it, but at least now I know, right? And if it tells me I'm 95% certain about it, that's very useful to know. So those are some of the things that could be improved in AI in the future. But I found over the last couple of years, there's been tremendous movement in AI, and it's really done a good job in replacing many of the basic tasks that were mundane and boring and nobody wanted to do them, and it replaces them very well. It's also for report writing and basically summarizing documents, literature reviews, for those kind of things. It's very, very practical.
And that's probably important to mention and to make sure. We are right now talking about AI as it is available today. It may well be that it does all sorts of new and additional things in a year, 5 years from now, and that's fine. But we still have to make sure that we understand where the limitations of these systems are. Quite frankly, just as we have to understand where the limitations of the people who work for us, or the people we work with, to some extent.
So just to go back a minute on accuracy. So you had mentioned that AI is used kind of as a side question for weather and you know, storing solar energy and stuff like that. So how accurate is it in that?
Surprisingly for that kind of stuff, it's surprisingly accurate. And the scariest thing about it is nobody can really tell you why. Right? It's what's happening right now. It's these models that become so complicated that even when you talk to some of the people that develop these systems, I recently talked to an engineer who's involved in the development of AI tools for turbo machinery, machine learning tools, and it's amazing how good they actually are, but then nobody really knows why they're that good. But I think it comes down to being able to deeply correlate a lot of data with these neural networks that getting deeper and deeper. It's not one or two or three levels, it's many, many levels where it's starting to, well, act like a human being, right? Currently what I'm seeing, at least for some of these correlations of or reviewing and analyzing very large data sets from multiple sources, it certainly does a better job than we as humans have been able to do with just simple statistical tools.
Okay. The big question, you guys touched on this in the very beginning. Can AI replace engineers? And then one step further on that, how does it change their job description?
I mean, not yet. And I'm close enough to retirement to not worry about it. But it certainly is another productivity tool that will eliminate certain tasks in our world, right? I mean, when you look back to the 1950s and you went to the big aerospace companies that had rooms and rooms and rooms of engineers sitting in front of drafting boards and making drawings by hand. And all of those jobs went away with ACAD because you develop new tools for drafting and design, et cetera. So thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, in engineering roles were replaced, but they were replaced with other engineering roles, right? And so AI kind of, the way I look at it, is similar. It's going to replace certain tasks, basic literature review, analysis of data, statistical review, things that normally an engineer, a young engineer would do, and it would take some time. That's going to be replaced by AI, but it's not going to replace the overall engineer, because we still need to have somebody who has a physical understanding of what's actually going on. And that's why when I talk to young engineers and they say, oh, how about AI? Will AI replace my job? I always tell them, focus on the physics. Don't focus on learning how a software works. Don't focus on learning how a FEA or CFD work. Try to understand what goes on in the machine from a physics perspective, because at least at this point in time, no AI that's out there can handle that.
And I, without trying to sound too proud about being engineer, but engineering is probably going to be one of the areas that's going to be at its core very hard to replace by artificial intelligence. But that requires essentially the engineers to be very solid on the fundamentals, as Klaus had said, to be able to confidentially use the AI tools. And that is, by the way, also one of the things that when you teach young engineers in colleges, it's probably not so important that they know how to use certain software, because that's something you can learn relatively fast, but rather to focus on the underlying principles that allows the engineers to judge the answers that they get from their computer, no matter whether it runs CFD tool or whether it's running artificial intelligence solutions. And under that basis, in a technical world, a well-qualified engineer is practically irreplaceable.
Okay, so are there other impacts, you know, the use of AI? Obviously, everyone's talking about, the surge in power based on these data centers. So how does that affect the industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of we mankind now works for the machine, right? We feed the machine by by producing energy for it so that we can keep the data centers running. But it's absolutely massive amounts of electricity are required for these data centers. The massive amounts of electricity have to be produced, and they're produced by a lot of turbo machinery, which makes us turbo machinery engineers happy. The fuel that needs to be supplied, because most of those machines are still fossil fuel power plants, but even if they're wind turbines, whatever, they're turbo machines. So there's a lot of machinery on the supply side, power plant side, natural gas pipeline side, LNG side, production side. So as the energy demand for these facilities increases, and I think we're just at the beginning of it, by the way, so will the demand for energy infrastructure increase drastically. We're seeing it right now. I mean, there's not enough machinery available in the market right now to meet the demands of all the AI data centers that are being built right now. And there's back orders for power generation equipment that is 5, 6, and I even hear numbers like 8 and 10 years for machinery so that you can get the power for data centers. So it has a huge secondary impact on our industry in that we're booming, especially on the power generation side, because these data centers need massive amounts of data. And it's not just a U.S. phenomenon, it's global.
Yeah, and it actually really has emphasized how difficult it is to bring supply chains up to speed if all of a sudden demand almost mushrooms. There's one thing though that especially data centers have made very clear, and that is that because you basically have to supply electricity at a fairly constant rate, no matter what the weather is, no matter whether it's day or night. And so that has highlighted one of the shortfalls of a lot of renewable energy sources that are intermittent or changing. So you see in that power generation discussions about building nuclear power plants, building fossil-fired power plants, simply to come up to provide the large energy demand that comes from that industry.
Yeah, we're clearly seeing a diversification back to fossil that's happening right now. I mean, there is if you look go to the major gas turbine manufacturers of the world, GE, Siemens, Solar, Mitsubishi, they're all booked out. They've sold all the gas turbines that they can make for the next 5 years or so. And that's because you need a steady power supply, and you're going to get that from natural gas combined cycle or even simple cycle power plants. We are also seeing a secondary effect because of wind and solar being intermittent. We're seeing a strong demand for energy storage, because that's the only other alternative you have, is to provide that buffer in the system that gives you a steady power supply. And so we see now a strong demand for energy storage solutions, both battery and mechanical solutions. We're seeing all kinds of energy storage systems that were considered to be crazy a couple of years ago are being considered now, because people are desperate to have a solution, period.
I mean, one of the things you very clearly see is that the growth in energy demand worldwide is much, much faster, and a lot of it is due to artificial intelligence than was anticipated in future predictions 5 or 10 years ago. So that is, in a way, let's call it an interesting effect that comes from the massive use of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and as a quick side note to that, I mean, everybody's talking about AI driving energy demand, and that's very true. But part of the electricity demand increase is also driven by electrification of the industry and use of electric vehicles, et cetera. That is just, people, when they started pushing for everything needs to be electric so that we have fewer fossil point sources, what they forgot is that you need utilities, you need power plans to make that electricity somewhere. And we're seeing that now. So it's not just AI, but it has to do with the entire electrification of the transportation, as well as other industries that are being electrified.
So just one last question. So do you think that we'll be able to sustain at these levels based on, you know, population growth and AI and all the things that are contributing to the power demands, do you think that we will be able to sustain it?
I mean, if you look at the exponential curve and power demand that you see right now, the answer and the supply chain availability, the answer is absolutely not. So there is a natural balance, right? There'll be more companies that will come online. There'll be more manufacturing capacity that comes online. That takes time. And so there is actually currently already a slowdown in the building of AI data centers and facilities because of the unavailability of power. Right? So the limiting factor right now, if you want to build a large AI facility, is not going to be the availability of cores from NVIDIA. It's basically how much power generation equipment or how much power you can get from utility. That's driving right now the ability to site a data center. And so that's a natural supply and demand kind of situation. There'll be a swing back where the supply industry will overbuild and then the market demand will decrease. And we've seen this in many industries and many other industries in the past, but that's a natural thing to happen. I don't think that overall, unless somebody comes up with a revolutionary new technology that drastically reduces the power demand of these computers, I don't see anything changing, and it's going to just be explosive growth.
Okay. Thank you, guys. This was a great conversation on AI. I enjoyed it a lot. So thank you both for your time and, you know, input.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed the discussion. It's a fun topic.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
And thank you for our audience for tuning in. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we'll see you next time.